You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Royal Blue Podcast. I'm Phil McBride, and today joined by Dave Prentice, Gav Buckland and Sam Carroll as we chew the fat over all the major talking points at Goodison Park. Looking back at an impressive victory at Leicester City and looking ahead to a big game on Saturday evening at Goodison, 2,000 fans in for the visit of Arsenal. And of course, it is Friday as we are recording, and as usual, Carlo Ancelotti has done his pre-match press conference this afternoon at Finch Farm. Plenty of talking points to go from that, so we will start there. And just before we came on air, we were discussing the injury news. Seamus Coleman back in contention, Preno. No James. Again, Carlo not prepared to take the risk. We'll start with those two for the moment. Seamus, does he come back in, or does Carlo, is he duty bound to stick with a winning team and an impressive winning team is that as well?
It's a tough question, this one. I mean, Carlo sort of half did what we wanted him to do on Wednesday. I'd called for consistency in defence. Can't make any changes at the back because they played so well defensively against Chelsea. And as we said, that familiarity, you know, so just breeds so much more solidity. So I was delighted to see the same back four, but very, very surprised to see changes. The same again further forward. I thought that, you know, at least two or three people would change. And maybe we should have done, you know, so bearing in mind, you know, so what happened with Alan. But for this one, I don't know. If he does make changes elsewhere, I still don't think he should at the back. I think when you've had back-to-back clean sheets, and okay, I'm guessing that the goalkeeper will change, you know, so Pickford will come back in again. But the actual back four itself, no, why would you change it when it's looked so solid, when they're actually, you know, sort of getting to know each other as game better and better. And there's just like an air of reassurance about the side now. And no doubt, you know, we'll come on to, you know, so how much James' absence may or may not have contributed to that. But the fact that that flat back four has played so well together, I wouldn't change it. And that may sound harsh on Seamus Coleman, but, you know, so be it. You know, you can't change a side that's kept clean sheets in two such difficult games. And hey, you know, so we've got a cup tie only 3-4 days later. So, you know, that may be the opportunity for Seamus to come back in. But no, personally, I wouldn't. I would leave well alone and leave the back four as it is.
Gav, Carlo was asked an interesting question at the press conference. Wasn't one of mine, obviously, because it was interesting. are Everton better defensively without James? And he started laughing, but basically said no, because we defend as a team and etc. But he wasn't, publicly at least, accepting that Everton have defended better in James's absence. Do you think we are better defensively without James in the team?
I suppose the question there is the formation we play when James is not in the team better for us defensively than when James is in the team, you know what I mean? Which it quite patently is, isn't it? If you play 4-2-3-4, we had great formation, 4-2-3-1 or 4-5, almost whatever you call it, you do look more solid, don't we? That, you know, it's inherently a bit more of a cautious formation than the 4-3-3, as we've seen. So, yes, but that is because of the team and the setup, isn't it? So, yeah, absolutely. I think the question was angled at is whoever's come in for James, do they defend better? Isn't it really? But it's the formation, isn't it, for me? With formation, we look far better with the 4-5-1 or 4-2-3-1 than 4-3-3 defensively, and that's been shown, hasn't it? As Preno said, two clean sheets, and be interesting to see what happens on Saturday. For me, I keep the same. I wouldn't change the defence at all. Okay. I'd leave it as is.
Sam, you were sat socially distanced next to me on Wednesday night at Leicester. What impressed you most about that victory?
I think it was just how we look like a proper team. I always say that it always feels when you watch Everton, like you know when we're going to lose or you know when we're about to concede a goal. But equally, sometimes it feels like you can know when we're going to play well. I think I said to you just before the first goal, you know, saying we're doing all right here, didn't we? Leicester win, probably the threat that I'd expected them to be. Jamie Vardy, I think, had one chance from a header, didn't he? Where I think probably the only time in the whole game where Godfrey got done on his side and Vardy kind of took up that space in between Holgate and Yerry Mina and when, you know, he did have free header and luckily it went straight down Olsen's throat. But apart from that, they hadn't troubled us. And, you know, I think that performance there, you know, we looked like the side that we thought we were going to be at the start of the season, I think. And probably the closest performance that resembled the Tottenham game at the start of the season. And made even more impressive by the fact that Alan, who was, you know, having a really, really good game in the centre midfield, went off and you know, that could have threw us out of our rhythm a little bit, but it didn't. And I thought we were equally good in the second half. And it was just the perfect away performance, wasn't it? So to have 6 points, three goals and non-conceded against Chelsea and Leicester in the space of a couple of days, it's completely swung the pendulum of our season again. So, you know, if we play like that away from home every game, there's not going to be many teams that beat Everton, because we've proven that we can be defensively solid when we have to be. But equally, we're a threat from set pieces. And when you've got magic men like Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin, you've always got a chance of getting a goal from nothing, like what Richarlison did. And, you know, he deserved that goal, and I think he needed that goal. So it was just a great all-round night, a really enjoyable night as well.
Preno, Sam mentions Alan there, and obviously, you know, injuries, no injury comes at a good time, of course, but yeah, it seems to have come at a particularly bad time, because Alan, for me, had just started to rediscover that level of performance he showed everybody against Spurs on the opening day. And it felt like, after a little bit of a difficult period where we had wondered and questioned his performances on this podcast, it felt like he was really starting to find his rhythm again.
It's a huge blow, no doubt whatsoever about that. I mean, any kind of hamstring problem, you know, is generally at least 5 or 6 weeks. And so, you know, who knows how many games that will mean he misses. I mean, I suppose the positive way of looking at it is that Abdoulaye Doucouré absolutely flourished. He was playing well anyway, but then, you know, so in a slightly, you know, tweaked, revised role, performed even better and looked absolutely superb. So there's always positives, you know, to somebody getting injured. And if you think about what's happened over the last few weeks, I mean, we've had injuries to really key figures. I mean, Luca Digne, who'd have thought we'd have, you know, overcome his absence as well as we have done, you know, Seamus Coleman, you know, so being missing. And now Alan's added to that list. So there will be positives. I mean, we've got a squad. We've got players that can come in. They're not going to be the same quality as Alan. We know that. But there's an opportunity there for maybe Gylfi Sigurdsson to do in a different role. Tom Davis, possibly, you know, sort of come in. There are options, but there's no doubt it's a blow, you know, whatsoever. And possibly this is the opportunity now for Doucouré to absolutely step up to the pedestal and absolutely shine. I mean, he's been, you know, one of the unsung heroes of the season so far already. Deservedly got the plaudits on Wednesday night. You know, he's made man of the match on the television, and deservedly so. And maybe it's an opportunity for him now. And then, of course, we've got the spectre of Gbamin in the background, you know, still, you know, hovering. So may or may not be available for selection, you know, sometime in the new year. So we'll see. But yeah, you can't disguise it. It's a blow. But the positive is that Carlo has proved he can overcome the blows of even the most key personnel in recent weeks and turn them into positives.
Gavin, you know, in many examples of why we signed Abdoulaye Doucouré and had been trying to sign him for 2 years, but when he's described as box to box, I think he almost literally did that on Wednesday night, didn't he? Mainly in our box, but he was excellent, wasn't he?
Oh, superb, Mel. I thought it was a superb team performance, full stop. So, I mean, there were several players who were top quality on you know, on Leicester. Yeah, I get what I was saying. I think Doucouré and Alan look better in a 4-2-3-1 because they got Sigurdsson in front of them. In 4-3-3, they can get cuff up the pitch, can't they? And have to come back, and they can be play a little bit differently when Sigurdsson's in front of them. They can be a bit more disciplined, that's why I think why we defensively we look better in this formation as well. It's not just the defence; it's that the two Decore and Allen look better suited to it as well. And I thought he was superb, Decore, on Wednesday. A couple of iffy passes, but that's just the nature of the game. And a couple of great tackles in our box where he's nicked the ball back, hasn't he, when they just looked as though they were going to threaten. I thought that was his best game for us on Wednesday, but not necessarily in the role, as you say. The good thing is not necessarily in the role that you would expect him to be. You'd expect him to be more effective up the other end of the pitch in his better games, but I thought he'd had the game brilliantly. He was there. I don't think in the game he was ever caught out of position that anyone. He always appeared to be where he needed to be when we expected him to be. And I thought he was brilliant on Wednesday in a superb team performance. So, you know, we've got to give credit to everybody else there.
Absolutely. Sam, so how does Carlo replace Alan tomorrow night for the visit of Arsenal?
It's a tough one, isn't it? I don't think Gomez was at his best when he came on against Leicester. So there's not a lot else he can really do, though, is there? I don't think at this point in time. It's the kind of wish it was we could fast forward maybe four weeks or so and see what Jean-Philippe Aubameyang was all about. But it's probably going to have to be, you know, Decore moving back a little step, you know, or doing the box-to-box role that he was so good in on Wednesday night. And then you have Sigurdsson and Gomez alongside him, or, you know, Gomez alongside Decore with Sigurdsson just ahead of them. So a big chance for Andre Gomez, I think. It's starting to feel more now or never for him. I think, you know, we all appreciate that he had that really bad injury and everyone's given him, well, I know it's only a year later, but it kind of feels like he hasn't shown that form that he did when he first signed for us and he was dominating games for quite a while now. And I really hope that there's a silver lining to this Alan injury, because Alan was playing so well for Gomez to, I think I just want to see him take on a bit more responsibility and a little bit more, you know, to recognise his importance to the team. I feel like it's something Sigurdsson's done, certainly over the last two games, to kind of say, you know, look, you're an experienced player, you're an expensive player, you know, and you're an important player who's got a key job to do. And, you know, to move the ball forward a little bit more, to try and move forward with the ball a little bit more and be a little bit more progressive in his thinking is certainly what I want to see. So it's a big test, but you can't change it too much, can you? So it's probably going to have to be Gomez, Decore and Sigurdsson, unless Carlo's got another change up his sleeve. But another big chance for Andre and a chance for Sigurdsson to continue his good form. I think me and Preno have always stuck up for him a little bit on this podcast, and he has had a couple of good games, so hopefully he can make it a hat trick of good performances in there.
Preno, in terms of trying to guess or second guess how Carlo might replace Ancelotti, do we totally overlook the idea that Mason Holgate could step forward, Seamus Coleman come back in at right back, and Mason could play alongside Decore midfield?
I would dismiss that. I mean, Holgate has done, you know, a couple of cameo roles there, and he's done okay. You know, so was at Old Trafford last season, you know, where he basically, you know, sort of stuck like glue to, was it playing alongside him? You know, he basically looked like a central defender who was playing out of position and, you know, sort of taking baby steps and, you know, sort of trying just to keep it as simple as humanly possible. I think there will be changes tomorrow. I know it sounds a bit strange given we've had two such positive performances back to back, but the games that are coming thick and fast, and we've got a cup quarter final on the Wednesday, a very winnable game on Boxing Day. So, you know, you'd expect two or three changes, you know, and tweaks. And Carlo himself has said that, you know, Dominic Calvert-Lewin has to have a rest at some stage. And you can't really call what he got on Wednesday night as a rest. Was it the 91st minute when he finally made way? So I think there might be one or two little tweaks. Don't think Mason Holgate, you know, sort of moving anywhere will be one of them. Like I say, for the reasons outlined earlier, I think the back four should remain as one and as solid as possible. Seamus, can he do a role further forward? No, I wouldn't have thought so. You know, he's a right back, and he's a right back alone. But there will be tweaks here and there. I just don't think it's going to involve Mason. I just think that back forward played so well over the last two games. And it's been a slight change of emphasis as well. We've looked more defensively cautious. You know, less offensively enterprising, if you like. We've tried to be a little bit more staid, a little bit more solid, a little bit more resolute, and it's been better for us. So played two teams who are very, very capable of scoring. I know Leicester are different on their own patch. The classic counter-attacking team, we never allowed them to do that. But it's going to be different on Saturday because Arsenal are the kind of team that, you know, are going through such an awful spell at the moment that you need to get at them as quick as possible and try and create opportunities. And if you like, be the Everton that we were prior to these two games, being a little bit more expansive, if you like. But, you know, Carlo will be aware of all that. He'll have his game plan already, you know, so up his sleeve and know exactly what he's going to do. I think we'll see one or two changes, but nothing wholesale, I don't think.
Gav, one change that Carlo has promised is that Jordan Pickford will return in goal. Obviously, he was rested on Wednesday night. Robin Olsen coming in. So it's the second time Carlo's done it now. And you know, taking what Carlo says at face value, it's rotation is something that he's done before in his career with his goalkeepers, and something that he will do. He will do again. I think for a lot of people, it's a little bit of an alien concept, and I think many supporters perhaps are a little bit sort of uncomfortable maybe with the idea of changing a goalkeeper week to week. What's your thoughts on it?
Rightly so. I don't see the point, to be honest with you. You said that when Olsen came in. Where was it? Southampton, did he play?
Newcastle.
Yeah. It seemed a bit of a strange one then. Seems even stranger now. Haven't come back a second time. And let's face it, he's looked solid, hasn't he? In both games, he's looked assured. I mean, to be fair, we protected them well on Wednesday. Just to do, who's the better goalkeeper for Everton at the moment and play there? I don't see why goalkeepers should be subject to slightly different new 12 fielders. Do you swap? I mean, I know we have done, but for injury reasons, do you swap your right back every game, different game time? I just don't. I don't see the point of it really, Phil. I mean, I appreciate where Carl is coming from, but it's slightly different for goalkeepers, obviously. But I just don't think. I just don't agree with it. I personally will play Olsen at the weekend because I thought in his two games he's looked really assured and capable, and he's got a bit of presence about him. So I don't see any reason why he wouldn't play him tomorrow.
It's a strange one. I mean, I think Jordan was excellent against Chelsea, absolutely superb.
Surprised.
But if you remember in that game, I mean, he slipped halfway through the second half and looked like he pulled his groin, and it was certainly struggling kicking for 3 or 4 minutes afterwards. So to me, when I saw the team sheet, I thought, oh, well, you know, he's protecting his groin. You know, it's just, you know, an obvious, you know, I don't know, just being cautious, just saving the possibility of him getting injured. But to not say that, to come out afterwards and just say, oh, no, it was rotation, surprised me. There was the obvious get-out for him there. So maybe he's just trying to keep Jordan on his toes. But, yeah, I agree with you, Gav. It's a strange way of doing it when you just played so well to then leave him out. And also, he didn't have a great deal to do, to be fair, on Wednesday. What he did very well. I mean, he was much more impressive at Newcastle, you know, where he did make some very, very good saves.
Yeah.
He had to. But, yeah, it's a strange one. But, hey,
team sheet. I don't get it. Yeah. I don't get it, but that's why Carlo's there and I'm podcasting, you know.
And you're on the podcast, yes.
Podcast, yeah. Yeah, I've got a top-class keeper on the podcast, of course. Don't we?
Well, Gav's neatly segued to Sam. Yeah. Sam's play as our resident goalkeeper. What's your take on the rotation system employed by Carlo?
Well, as a former... Can I call myself professional? Probably could say I was professional, wouldn't I, really?
Yeah. Go with it.
Did you get paid?
No.
Well, there, you're not.
I think the press conference today was quite interesting, wasn't it, when Carlo said that he started at Real Madrid with Diego Lopez and Iker Casillas, and it's because he thinks there's less chance of making a mistake. But I don't know, it kind of does feel like you don't have confidence in either one or either of them.
You did say, I might have misunderstood what Carlos said, but did he say at one point, if you sat on the bench, you don't make mistakes?
Basically, yeah. Or did he say that if you sat on the bench and you come in cold, you're more likely to make mistakes? It was
right. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah.
I wasn't totally sure on the point he was trying to make, but I honestly don't. I think in an ideal world, you have your number one, don't you? And you have your number two's happy to come in and sit on the bench. And that's the way, you know, Premier League football certainly should work in an ideal world. But at the moment, you know, we know that Jordan's struggles over the last maybe 18 months have been well documented. And maybe this is Carlo's way of giving him that extra little kick up the bum, for want of a better phrase. But at the same time, it is quite odd timing because he's probably played some of his best Everton matches over the last 5 or 6 weeks coinciding with that Newcastle game. So for Jonas to, sorry, for definitely wasn't Jonas Loftus who played on here on Wednesday, for Robin Olsen to come in, and he played equally well, didn't he? I think he is a calm presence. He's a big unit, and apart from that one little kind of miscommunication he had with Mina, he was unflappable and you know, without doing anything spectacular, he had a good game. So yeah, I'm not really sure what's going to happen from there. You know, I'd imagine Pickford will play, you know, the Arsenal game and then the Manchester United game, because that's such a big game. But it does seem like this rotation is going to continue until the end of the season. So what's the thinking beyond the end of the season, when Olsen's loan ends, is probably the bigger question for Carlo at the moment.
Yeah, just add on to that point, Phil. That's I'm saying that. It's one thing about taking your keepers at Real Madrid, isn't it? Where in 90% of the games, all the ball's going to be at the other end of the pitch. And you're giving your goalie some sort of game time just to get used to the atmosphere and stuff. But it's another thing in the Premier League where you're going to be busy most games, isn't it? If you're an Everton keeper. You know, you can afford to do it at Real Madrid. At Everton, it's a slightly different ask, isn't it? Different scenario. So I'm not sure comparing Real Madrid and Everton is maybe the best... you know, if you're doing it because you did it at Real Madrid, I'm not sure that's the best, you know, comparison, to be honest with you. It just doesn't work for me, to be fair. But
Prenner, before we move on, last one, and I think on Jordan and the rotation, and you mentioned, you know, perhaps it was a decision to keep Jordan on his toes. You know, and something that Sam sort of half alluded to. It seems to me it's something to keep Jordan mentally sharp, and maybe because, as Sam said, Jordan's actually played really well the last couple of games. Is there any sort of thought or school of thought that Carlo's gone, yeah, you have been playing really well, but I just want to rein you in because it's maybe the concentration and I hasten to say maybe moments of complacency which have undone Pickford in moments at Everton?
That's an interesting angle, that, yeah. And an awful lot of psychology involved in football nowadays. So maybe it is something to do with that. It's a dual-edged sword, really, isn't it? You know, so he's had such a good performance, and so the possibility of him bouncing out at Leicester and, you know, so wanting to get involved in everything is taken away. Just no, you just sit in the stand and just, you know, so watch how Robin Olsen does it. So maybe that's part of it. Don't necessarily agree. I'd like to see the continuity, because whilst preaching the clapback for staying the same, I think the goalkeeper also staying the same behind him contributes to that. And, you know, the more you play together, the more you understand each other's game, the more you understand when the goalkeeper's going to come off his line, when he's going to stay on his line, you know, so which way he's going to kick it and so on and so on. So I think that's part of it. So personally, my preference would have been for him to have remained. But maybe that is an explanation for us, because clearly it wasn't anything to do with that tweaked groin that we spotted on Saturday. So maybe it was a bit of psychology at work. And hey, it's a clean sheet. And, you know, if Jordan's back in again tomorrow and performs well again, you know, job done. He's being proved correct, as he usually is.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
We'll stay with previewing the game before we come on to talk about Carlo's looming one-year anniversary. Gav, Arsenal are not in good shape. How do you assess the challenge tomorrow night?
It's going to be still a tough game, isn't it? They've got good players, Arsenal. They'll be hurting. Not 1-6, I think, isn't it? I think they've only scored a couple of goals in that time. But they've still got enough quality players, haven't they, on the pitch to give us problems. But I agree what Pleno was saying. I think, given their shorter confidence, I don't think we should sit back tomorrow. I think I'd like to see us on the front foot a little bit more, to be fair. But they have had some... I mean, the home form's been dreadful, hasn't it? I don't think they've won away since the opening day. I think they won away at Man United, didn't they? Sorry, they won away at Fulham on the opening day. But I think there'll be a challenge. I think it'll be a big challenge tomorrow. They've got good players. Historically, they've got a good record against us as well, haven't they? So I think it'll be... I think it's not a gimme by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, Gav, I'll read you back one of the stats that you sent me. Not long before.
I know what you're going to say.
No, I just think it's a really interesting stat. And perhaps telling of a pendulum shift, and perhaps telling of how they've struggled to cope post Wenger, or certainly not the proposition they once were. Everton have registered only 3 wins in the last 27 fixtures in all competitions with Arsenal. However, all of Everton's 3 victories have come in the last 8 games at Goodison, which is 1-3, drawn 3, lost 2. So it feels as though, a fixture which historically in modern terms has been weighted heavily in Arsenal's favour, it feels there's been a bit of a readdressing of the balance.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a bit like Chelsea, isn't it? We've never beat Chelsea at Goodison for donkeys. I think we've won 9 of the last 14 meetings at Goodison against them. But yeah, I thought the one you've got to say there about their threat is Aubameyang's got 4 goals and 4 starts against us.
Yes,
I thought that was the one you were going to there.
And scored in midweek.
All at the Emirates, though, to be fair. But no, I think it'll be a really difficult game tomorrow. And it'll be a challenge, but I want us to be a little bit more kind of said about not being as offensive. So being offensive on Saturday evening.
Sam, Mikel Arteta, of course, appointed, around the same period as Carlo. You know, they've had the same number of games in the Premier League since Carlo's return. He's under pressure, though, isn't he, Mikel? Do you think he's in real trouble? Do you sense that Arsenal will give him time? He was obviously somebody who was considered when we were looking for a manager, of course.
I think they'll give him time, but how much time can you give? You know, if we beat them, which hopefully we do, and I do think we've got a chance to do that. I think we're a lot stronger than them. Then it could be ending. What are we on? Game week 13, 14, a couple of points above the relegation zone. Which how long can you let that go on for? Really, isn't it? I imagine they'll get out of it, but no one's ever too good to go down. Although I can't see obviously Arsenal being anywhere near it come the end of the season, but. It is a strange one. I don't think the squad is maybe as good as what they thought it was. They did have a good end to last season, won the FA Cup, which is probably buying them a bit of time. But it does, again, highlight, it makes the appointment of Carlo Ancelotti even better. You know, just that in itself, to get Carlo Ancelotti to Everton, the three-time Champions League winner, is enough in itself, but I think he was just the right man at the right time, and probably there's a few people at Arsenal kicking themselves for not getting Ancelotti themselves, just because Arteta is showing now what a risk that would have been, and how it might have, but it doesn't look like he would have been the man for Everton at all. And I think we've struck gold with Carlo, and even as I was saying to you at Leicester, he's just calm after win, lose, draw. And I think that rubs off on the supporters and the players as well. So we've definitely got the better end of the deal. But, as a former Everton player, you obviously want Mikel Arteta to do all right, just not the two games a season when we're playing them.
Prano, before we come on to talk about Carlo's anniversary at the football club and the things he said to us about his plans certainly going to next season, Arteta, is the pressure real? Should he be concerned about his job, or do you think, you know, they've employed Mikel for the long term, Arsenal?
Things can change very, very quickly in football, and certainly over Christmas when you've got that many games in such a short space of time. I mean, he was the absolute, sort of poster boy for the football club. They wanted him badly. Pep Guardiola's disciple, the guy that's going to, sort of bring his brand of football to Arsenal, similar to how Wenger did all those years ago. And he will need time to do that. But you don't get that kind of time in football. And if he does suffer a bad Christmas, if they have another two or three, sort of games in succession defeated, I think he does need to worry quite seriously. I mean, if they'd lost in midweek against Southampton, that would have been five successive home defeats. And that's never happened before in Arsenal's history. It's absolutely staggering. So, treading in uncharted territory there. I mean, as it was, they got back and they drew, but they've lost Gabriel, which I think is a big plus in our favour, by the way, the fact that he's not playing, on Saturday night. If you look at the squad, you automatically see names like Aubameyang and Lacazette and Ceballos, and you think, they've got really good players, but they've also got a lot of players who potentially, will be very good. I'm thinking of like Tierney and Saka and Maitland-Niles, they're decent players, but not the kind of players that maybe you're going to rely on week in, week out. David Luiz, might come in now with Gabriel being suspended. So, not the kind of guys that you want in a crisis, maybe. So a lot of younger players who are still unused to this kind of thing. So, yeah, I think he does have reason to be concerned if things continue to go wrong. I dearly hope they do on Saturday. I mean, it's strange, Arsenal, because whenever you see a fixture list in front of you, and you see Arsenal on there, you automatically think, wow, it's going to be tough because of their reputation, because historically, what they've always done against us. But we shouldn't be feeling that way. This is a team that's been beaten by Burnley at home, the last couple of weeks. They are struggling badly. And so it's an opportunity for us to really, sort of take advantage of that mood that'll be, sort of in the camp and get a win. And imagine if we can win on Saturday. Chelsea, Leicester and Arsenal, three games that we'd have looked at and thought, wow, it's going to be tough. 9 points from those games. That'll be a happy Christmas. Going to be absolutely tremendous, won't it? So, yeah, it's an opportunity and I think we need to take it. And if that means, basically causing even more harm to Mikel Arteta's future, well, I'm sorry, so be it. It's a dog-eat-dog world football.
Just add another point to what Preno was saying there. I think, where it might be slightly different tomorrow is we played, back four, but got Godfrey playing left back, who's right-footed, but nobody's played with real natural width on the right-hand side against us, have they? I'm just wondering if you do that against us, it gives us a slightly different challenge down that left-hand side, So it would be interesting to see how they line up tomorrow. But I think that's the one area where that I would be concerned for our defence, if somebody... some real natural width on either side of the pitch, but particularly on our left. But it's an eminently winnable game, isn't it, really, when you look at it? We're start since 1974, I believe, for Arsenal.
Yes, so, that's right, in terms of points.
Yeah. So,
interesting. So I'll get the lads.
Where did we finish that season, Gav?
Well, it is a bit like, I was thinking about this before, so let's go get so. It is about like 74, 75 this season, isn't it? Where the leadership changed hands every week that year, and we finished fourth, didn't we? So I'll take that this year.
Yeah, absolutely.
100%,
I'll get the lads' predictions at the end as is customary, but the final part of today's pod, we will discuss Carlo's impending one-year anniversary. Of course, it was December the 21st, a Saturday morning as the team prepared to face Arsenal at Goodison. Carlo's appointment was confirmed. Duncan was still in charge that day, but Carlo was in the stands. Carlo kindly giving us some time recently to reflect on that and mainly look ahead to what he hopes is the next 12 months. Sam, if all goes to Carlo's plan, this season will qualify for Europe, any European competition available. Next season will be genuine top four challengers, and therefore, if you're a top four challenger, you're in the title conversation. Unbelievable.
It would be, wouldn't it, considering the mood we were all in this time last year, minus a week or two. So if he can do that to his kind of time frame, then it would be unbelievable. I think it's been a much-needed year of stability, I think, for Everton fans. You know, even when, you know, we had Allardyce come in for a bit, didn't we? And I think people just wanted to see the back of him. Silva then came in and had, you know, that torrid first winter where questions were being asked about his future. And then ultimately, you know, ended up getting sacked the following winter. So there was a good two or three seasons following Koeman where it was all just a little bit up in the air. But Ancelotti's brought calmness. You know, he's brought all that experience and acumen, certainly tactically, that he's got. And he seems to be, you know, one of the world's best man managers. I think it was Kaká who came out recently, wasn't it? Said he was his favourite coach because of the way, you know, he is on a human level with players, which, you know, from a Ballon d'Or winner isn't bad praise at all. So I think reflecting on the year past and looking at the foundations he's built here, you know, with a bit of help from Marcel Brands and the board and the transfer market, I don't think there's any reason why we can't qualify for Europe this season. And then, you know, with more smart work, you know, and trying to get where we've wanted to go since Marcel Brands came to the club in terms of offloading the rest of the deadwood that we want to, which, you know, we will in the next 12 to 18 months as the rest of those contracts expire. With the right signings, there's no reason why we can't do it. You know, you look at everyone else in the Premier League. It took Pochettino a couple of years at Spurs. It certainly took Jurgen Klopp 2 or 3 years at Liverpool to get to where, you know, they were in the, not even the final form, but moving towards that kind of thing. So, you know, we know it takes time, but certainly from what we've seen over the last two matches, and I think what is, you know, the most heartening thing for Everton fans is there certainly seems to be an end game and a point to it and where Ancelotti wants to go. I think there was too many times under the likes of Marco Silva where even when we were winning games, didn't really seem to be anything coming after that, whereas, you know, we know that Ancelotti doesn't particularly have a style, you know, like you might attach to Pep Guardiola or Jurgen Klopp, but, you know he sets up a team to go out and win every game, and I think that's what Everton needs. And if we can get, at the very least, Europa League next season and attract a higher caliber of player, have a little bit more money in the bank, then it's going to be exciting times for Evertonians, and it's what they deserve after, you know, sticking by the team through some pretty grim performances and stuff over the last few years. So, yeah, a good 12 months overall, and hoping for an even better 12 months after this.
Prenna, would I be fair to summarise your reaction to what Carlo said in our interview as you fully embracing the ambition of his words?
100%. I love his positivity. If I just read out that sentence again, almost repeating what you said earlier. But to hear an Everton manager say something like, the target for next season will be to reach the top four in the Premier League. And I think you actually wrote, Ancelotti says, without hesitation. And when you're in the top four, you're able to fight for the top four. It means at least you can fight for the title. Now, you know, you don't hear Everton managers speak with that level of ambition very often. I'm struggling to think of the last time we had a manager actually speak as positively as that. I don't think Joe Royal never certainly talked about winning the league. So, you know, we could be going back to the days of Howard. So, but Everton should be talking about things like that. This is a club that's won 9 league titles in the club's history, 5 FA Cups, 1 European trophy. We should be talking and thinking as ambitiously as that. And the fact that we've got a manager that has come in and has spoken as ambitiously as that is, you know, it's music to my ears. But the fact that it's Carlo Ancelotti saying it as well means that it doesn't get mocked. You know, so if, you know, for argument's sake, David Moyes, you know, so when he turned up at Manchester United, I win, that's what I do. And, you know, so West Ham, where he, you know, came out with some other kind of phrase, and people sneered about it because he hasn't got a track record in English football of winning things. So people are saying, really? Well, you know, so where's your evidence to back up that claim? Whereas Carlo has got evidence to back up that claim. He has won things at every football club he's been at, virtually. You know, he's created football clubs from scratch. So, people don't mock. People think, well, okay, so maybe he does believe that. And he's got the backing as well at boardroom level. He's allowed to spend, sort of what he wants to spend. And he's already showed that he can bring in top quality players. I mean, James Rodriguez, Alan Decore. He's only effectively had one, sort of transfer window, and it's been very, very successful. So if we see another, similar, slew of signings, maybe not in January, but maybe next summer again, you'll see, incremental improvements again. So that's why I'm so pleased to see it. I was genuinely heartened, to read that, because he's an elite level manager and he's talking about Everton as being an elite level football club again. And it's been a bit too long since we've been talking like that.
Gav, you text me interesting comments from Carlo.
Yeah. Those comments that I alluded to. There, I thought they were quite comforting, and I thought exactly that it's one thing somebody saying him who's come up from the Championship or whatever, it's another thing when Carlo says it, because I've been in the top four like 20 seasons of my career or whatever it is. So I think that was good to see. I still have reservations, which I'm not going to go into that. I had reservations for Carlo joined, as you know, when I expressed on the podcast, and I still do. But one of them was that, did he have real ambition for Everton? Was it just like another couple of million quid for his pension pot, at the end of his career? But it quite clearly isn't, based on that conversation and his behaviour so far in his 12 months. Is it? He's clearly got the bit between his teeth. And I think, I know it sounds, it sounds wrong, but the whole environment over the last 12 months off the pitch has made the appointments work a little bit better, I think, because said during the summer, I think at the moment, and I think even over the next year or two, I think if you're an experienced manager who's had 20 years on the clock, it's going to be enormously beneficial for you managing in the current environment. Now, what we're talking about here, injuries, managing players, man management, all that type of stuff. I think if you've experienced 20 years, 25 years in the dugout, that's going to be enormously beneficial for you. Not just now, but going forward, as I say, I can see the fallout from what's going on at the moment. That's another couple of years. It's no coincidence, isn't it? Two of the better managers in the Premier League at the moment would be Mourinho, Moyes and Ancelotti, who have probably been the three managers. I know Hodgson's been there, but in terms of managing top flight, 20-odd years, isn't it, for each of them? And I don't think that's a coincidence. I think that's because the present environment means that if you are hugely experienced, it's going to assist your team and your club enormously. And I think he's got a point to prove as well. I get the thing that actually he wants to show he can do, be successful or relatively successful without necessarily being at an elite European level club.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think that is obviously something that he's conscious of. I think him and Mourinho are in similar positions for me. Managers have been written off as your days have gone. We've now got people like Klopp and Guardiola. I know they've had a difficult time. Like Sir Klopp, Guardiola, Pochettino, to a degree, at Spurs. They're the future, present, and coach. The present and future of coaching. Your days are gone. I think you get the impression with Carlo and Mourinho in particular that actually they're quite keen to have the last laugh in some respects.
And it does feel, doesn't it, given the other comments that Carlo gave us about he really hopes he can see through the full length of his contract, because he hasn't, ever since he left Milan, he's lasted 2 years or less, hasn't he? Every other club, and some of those have been the most ruthless football clubs on the planet.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that I know, Sam, you're talking about that, really, about going forward, about transfers, and is the club's current financial position, the sustainability of it, and whether that will hinder what he wants going forward. That's the only sort of, cloud to the silver lining, as it were. But I think at the moment he's shown his experience, and that's been really beneficial for us. It's been unusual 12 months, though, to judge a manager by, hasn't it, really? You've effectively had three seasons in that time, haven't you?
Indeed. We could talk all evening about Carlo's 12 months and what he said and his vision for the future, but we will have to sort of bring it to a close there. But before we do, it is obviously, of course, customary predictions time. Sam, I'll start with you. Everton versus Arsenal, Saturday evening, 5:30. How do you see it going?
Do you know what? I'm confident, and I think I'm right before the ball's even been kicked. 4-0.
There's always a first time for everything.
4-0, wow.
4-0,
wow.
Toffees, Richarlison first goal. You heard it. You heard it right here first.
Right. Rationalise
it. Why 4-0?
I just genuinely don't get
blind optimism.
You don't get this feeling Evertonian much, but we are better than them. And okay. I think fans back in, big game, big way to kind of kick on before that United quarter final. And I think if we get in the faces nice and early, we could do a number on them like we've done a couple of times over the past few years. So big score. I'm going to back it up and I'm going to put a little bet on it before the game, I think.
I think... With the club's new Colombian betting partner with that, Sam, or announced this afternoon. I think Sam makes a good point, though, Preno. You know, I experienced it first, you know, sort of in the flesh, the return of supporters. I mean, yeah. I know it was 2000, and I know maybe there was a bit, you know, a little bit of emotion in my piece after the game, and maybe got a touch carried away, but it made such a difference. And you know, it's going to be 2,000 different supporters in there tomorrow night. And I just think Arsenal are probably thinking this is the worst time to come in that respect. In the current situation, if they'd have been to Goodison when there was nobody in, they probably would have fancied it. They'd fancied getting out of this run of form. But, you know, I think it's going to make a massive difference. How do you see it going?
Well, I was very, very pleasantly surprised the impact that the crowd had. I mean, I spoke before the game and said that it's going to be negligible, you know, so it's only 2,000, what difference can it make? But, you know, obviously I was watching it on television rather than inside the stadium, but it did physically make a difference. You could tell that the players were lifted by it. You could tell it was having an impact, maybe not the impact that, you know, so an absolutely, you know, howling, wailing, you know, 40,000 bear pit would have, but it was still an impact. And so that will have a difference again on Saturday night. I'm optimistic, and I'm going to claim credit for the clean sheet last week, because I said on the podcast that there's no way on God's earth we're keeping a clean sheet. So, sure enough, and I think I went for a 2-2 draw. I got it hopelessly wrong. People on social media very kindly pointed that out to me. So I said it again before the Leicester game. I was like, right, well, I'll say we're not keeping a clean sheet on Wednesday. And sure enough, we did. So I don't want to tempt fate. So there is no way on God's earth we're keeping a clean sheet on Saturday. So we're going to win 3-1.
3-1. Very good. Gav?
I didn't expect to hear 4-0 and 3-1. I'm going to halve Sam's score and go with 2-0, because I think, right, we're in better form, looking at the team, looking like, I don't think, is that start? We've not had a shot on target against us in the second half of the last two matches.
Something like that, or very, very few indeed.
Not had three clean sheets on the spin in the Premier League under Ancelotti. You know, I think 2-0 to the mighty Blues. I tell you what, Richarlison to score as well. I think he'll go on. I just fancy him for a bit of a hot streak.
Yeah.
At the moment, that's all these.
I was going to say, for Arsenal, aside with the quality of players like Aubameyang and Lacazette and Pepe in there, their average goals scored this season, 0.85 goals a game. They can't score to save their lives. So, you know, that contributed, you know, coinciding with Everton's newfound defensive resilience. I think Gavin could be on the right lines there. I certainly hope so.
I
think we may concede, but I don't see us coming unstuck. I think we'll win 2-1. I think maybe, as some of you guys have alluded to, I sense there may be a tweak in the team and the formation to be a little bit more adventurous. You know, at home to a struggling Arsenal does not necessarily require the same sort of formation as playing Chelsea and Leicester. So I think it would be a little bit more of an open game, but I think we'll come through 2-1. Okay, good stuff, chaps. Thank you very much for your company, and thank you very much for listening. Acoustic with us across the weekend. Tomorrow evening, myself and Sam will be in the ground to cover the game. So stay with us for all the best news, analysis and reaction. Thank you very much for listening. This has been the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.